Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 407, titled Pecunia Nervus Belli, von Clausewitz, the concept of total war and the U.S. current accounts deficit. This program is being recorded on April 21st of 2003, and this is Side 2. We're going to continue, we're going to plunge right in here, and we're going to continue with the very complex line of analysis. Again, journalist and the late journalist and professional cynic Ambrose Bierce noted that, quote, "War is God's way of teaching Americans geography, and I'm not sure even the Creator could teach Americans economics, but we will see." We're going to return briefly to a number of articles about the implication of the SARS disease for the world economy, and in the context of what I'm talking about, this is essential. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of April 6th of the year 2003. From the front page of the business section, David Armstrong has an article, Economic Tsunami, and skipping down, complicating the possible long-term effects of the war is its timing. The war is being fought while the U.S. economy is still struggling. The dollar has fallen by 17% against the euro since early 2002, making imports from countries such as Germany and France costly for Americans. And skipping down, we're going to see, not skipping down, but we're going to take a look, I should say, at another article. This from the Financial Times of April 12th and April 13th of 2003. Now, note the impact of SARS on the world travel industry and on the world economy, and as we're going to see, potentially at least on the aircraft manufacturing business, and note the struggle between what is really a geopolitical and macroeconomic struggle between the dollar and the euro. This article, again from the Financial Times of April 12th and April 13th, this is an article by Joe Leahy in Hong Kong. It's headlined, SARS could spread worldwide, warns World Health Organization. It reads in part, the SARS disease poses one of the most serious global health threats since AIDS because of its infectiousness and potential to spread through air travel, the World Health Organization warned yesterday. It said other diseases that have emerged in recent decades, such as Ebola, had higher fatality rates but tended to be focused on limited geographic areas and were not as easily passed on. Quote, SARS could become the first severe new disease of the 21st century with global economic potential, said Dr. David Heyman, executive director of the World Health Organization's communicable disease programs. Skipping down again. The disease has affected hotel and airline bookings across Asia and led economists to revise down their forecasts for regional growth. Dr. Heyman said global economic consequences were already estimated at about $30 billion U.S. dollars. He said the disease's incubation period of up to 10 days meant it could be transported in symptomless air travelers all over the world. And again, noting the fact that the Asian economy and the Asian central banks have propped up the dollar at this critical time. Notice also the timing of this in terms of the world economy as a whole, because Asia was being counted upon to help the world economy. Again, from the Financial Times of Monday, April 14th of 2003, this is an article by Stephen Roach. It's titled, Asia Sneezes and the World Catches a Cold. This reads in part as follows, skipping down. With the Chinese now reluctant to travel, and not just overseas but also at home, and with Asian countries restricting the entry of visitors from affected areas, the SARS effect could easily escalate. Morgan Stanley, by the way, this writer, Stephen Roach, is a chief economist with Morgan Stanley, beginning again, with the Chinese now reluctant to travel not just overseas but also at home, and with the Asian countries restricting the entry of visitors from affected areas, the SARS effect could easily escalate. Morgan Stanley has pared its 2003 estimate of growth in Asia, ex-Japan, from 5% to 4.5%. This assumes a 60% fall in tourism over the next 3 months and then a return to normal. Unfortunately, the SARS effect is concentrated on Asia, the region of the world that we had counted on to keep the global economy afloat. With this source of global resilience now being undermined, the global economy has little left to support it. Had economic growth been more vigorous before the outbreak of SARS, this probably would not have made such a difference. Sadly, that is not the case. There is far more to the story of emerging global weakness than a SARS-related downturn in Asia. War and the related certainties are equally important factors, but SARS may be the tipping point. And yet another column talking about SARS in this context, and this gets closer to the von Clausewitz concept of total war. This is from the New York Times of April 4th of 2003. This is an article by Paul, an op-ed column, I should say, by Paul Krugman. It's called Guns, Germs, and Stahl. That's a pun on the German word for steel, which is Stahl. And also the Gun, Germs, and Steel, a text by Jared Diamond. Skipping down. Serious people know that germs pose a far greater threat to mankind than terrorism, and this in the context of the September 11th raids. Serious people note that germs pose a far greater threat to mankind than terrorism, and readers of books like William McNeil's Plagues and Peoples and Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel know microbes have been the downfall of many a civilization. SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, a new virus from Guangdong province in China, doesn't look like a civilization killer and probably isn't nearly as bad as the 1918-19 influenza virus. But experts fear it may be too late to prevent a global SARS pandemic, that is, it may be too late to stop the virus from spreading throughout the world. And the bug is already having major economic consequences. Fear of the disease has paralyzed much business in Hong Kong and has led to a drop in air travel worldwide. Even if SARS doesn't become widespread here, and that's not a safe bet, it can do a lot of damage to our own economy because the world has grown so interdependent. Consider this. The most likely engine of a vigorous U.S. recovery would be a renewed surge in technology spending, and Guangdong is now the workshop of the information technology world, the place where a lot of the equipment that we would expect businesses to buy if there was an investment boom, for example, components for wireless computer networks, is assembled. The virus is already hampering production, not so much because workers have become sick, as because Taiwan-based managers and engineers are afraid to visit their plants. The result may be to stall an investment recovery before it starts. The war has monopolized everyone's attention, including mine, but other things are happening, and you shouldn't be shocked if the economic news turns awful. Again, considering September 11th, SARS, whatever the origin of that disease, and we'll touch on that, and the U.S. current accounts deficit, and the advent of the euro, and consider all of these things in the context of their impact, not only on the global economy, the U.S. current accounts deficit, and also the airline business, and the aircraft manufacturing business. Now, an article that we looked at in 405 and that gets right to the core of this dilemma, listen very closely to the reading of this article and note Airbus. We're going to talk about Airbus. We're going to talk about Karl-Heinz Schreiber, the German clandestine mover and shaker, an individual compared to Licio Gelli of the P2 Lodge. And we've noted Karl-Heinz Schreiber and his work as a pivotal lobbyist for Airbus in For the Record programs 194, 276, and 278, the CDU funding scandal, a very, very complex eventuality that linked the funding of CDU politicians and conservative politicians in France with the Saudi economy, with a sale of ThyssenKrupp tanks to Saudi Arabia, with the ThyssenKrupp development, along with Totalfina ELF, the former French oil company, of the Leuna facility in East Germany, and Karl-Heinz Schreiber and his work as a lobbyist for Airbus and his payoffs to key politicians. Karl-Heinz Schreiber threatened in no uncertain terms that his disclosures could bring down governments all around the world. But now consider the euro. Consider the fact that Iraq became the first OPEC country to denominate its oil in euros. Consider the effect of September 11th and the Bush administration's budget cuts and consequent military buildup to fight this world war, so to speak, with the Muslim population of what the Nazi geopoliticians called the Earth Island. And consider Grover Norquist, the point man for the Islamists in the Republican Party and administration, and the point man for the budget cutting. And consider the position of the euro versus the dollar. Consider the fact that the only way the U.S. survived the enormous budget deficits and the plunging of the U.S. into debt that took place under the Reagan and Bush administrations, those administrations affected by political protégés of Helena von Damm, in turn, or political selectees of Helena von Damm, the political protégé of Otto von Bolschwing. Once again, the Financial Times of Tuesday, March 25th of 2003. This is an article by Paul Betts and Martin Arnold in Paris. It's headlined, Europeans Tried to Pull Boeing into Euro. The owners of Airbus, the pan-European aircraft maker, are seeking to persuade their main U.S. aerospace rival Boeing to adopt the euro as the benchmark currency for the traditionally dollar-based commercial aircraft market. That paragraph again. The owners of Airbus, the pan-European aircraft maker, are seeking to persuade their main U.S. aerospace rival Boeing to adopt the euro as the benchmark currency for the traditionally dollar-based commercial aircraft market. The call from Philippe Camus, co-executive of the Franco-German European Aeronautic Defense and Space Company, or EADS, reflects the cost disadvantage that Airbus currently suffers following the sustained depreciation of the dollar against the euro. Quote, currencies are a factor of competition, and we want to force Boeing to adopt our currency structure, unquote, said Mr. Camus in his first interview since the death earlier this month of Jean-Luc Lagardère, the EADS co-chairman. However, Mr. Camus' call also has a symbolic edge, reflecting the recent change in the balance of power in the civil aircraft market. Airbus, of which EADS owns 80% and BAE Systems of the UK 20%, last year claimed 54% of new orders for large aircraft by units and dollar value, with Boeing taking the rest. Airbus started offering euro-priced aircraft when the single currency was launched in 1999, but demand has been limited as the used aircraft market remains entirely dollar-denominated. Financiers have up until now been reluctant to lend against assets with such a currency risk, present. Mr. Camus said Airbus was fully provisioned for U.S. dollar fluctuations this year in 2004, but coverage incrementally decreased after that. He also emphasized that 30% of components making up Airbus airliners now came from the U.S., providing some natural hedging. In turn, Boeing also derived an important proportion of its parts list from manufacturers in European countries such as Italy and Britain. A similar shift in base currencies was proposed a year and a half ago by some oil-producing countries, including Iran, Libya, and Russia, which suggested that oil prices should be expressed in euros. Before the outbreak of war, Iraq was already pricing its oil in euros. There is also an historical precedent of such a shift when several decades ago, at a time of extreme dollar weakness, oil-producing countries decided to express the price of oil through a basket of currencies. A U.S. oil industry analyst yesterday suggested that there would only be a case for the euro to become the reference currency for oil if it unseated the U.S. dollar to become the strongest currency on a lasting basis. It remains to be seen what happens with regard to the aircraft manufacturing business. I would note also that a number of years ago, about a decade or so ago, I did a number of broadcasts with Professor Wilhelm Stauffer of Stauffer Consultants, and he noted that the German airlines industry, in particular the state-supplemented Lufthansa company, was moving to control air, basically to gain control of the air travel industry. It remains to be seen what the overall effects of SARS and September 11th are on the airline industry per se. It's certainly hurting. It'll be interesting to see who picks up the pieces. Note also, however, the impact of SARS and the September 11th events and basically on airline travel. And it'll be interesting to see to what extent the von Clausewitz concept of total war applies in this context. Again, in the consummately important contest between the dollar and the euro, and again, the only reason we've gotten away with the insane economics of the Reagan and Bush years and now the second Bush years. Bear in mind that all of the people that Reagan and Bush had as cabinet appointees were people selected by Helena von Dahm, the protege of Otto von Bolschwing, one of the highest ranking SS intelligence people. And I've discussed some of his, von Bolschwing's views about how the Jewish people could be manipulated as sort of global or geopolitical agent provocateur in For the Record 399. I would suggest that some of the so-called neocons in the background of the Bush administration are being manipulated in a similar fashion. The Project for a New American Century, that's a think tank that was put together with some of the neocons at its core, they were ruminating about an American-dominated century, namely the 21st, and about how the resulting military buildup could only be justified to the American people in the event of a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Just such an event took place about a year later. I suspect that although the neocons and their allies are looking simply at a very one- or two-dimensional analysis controlling the Middle East and perhaps the oil business, that the concept, again, of the current accounts deficit, the weakening of the dollar as the reserve currency of choice, and the application of the von Clausewitz concept of total war will wind up in a three- or four-dimensional sense destroying the United States. More about Boeing and its competition with Airbus. Bear in mind that that Airbus, the EADS conglomerate behind that, is now pressuring Boeing to price its product in euros. And bear in mind the struggle between the dollar and the euro. Wall Street Journal from today, Monday, April 21st, 2003, article by J. Lynn Lunsford, headlined, Boeing losing ground to Airbus faces key choice. It reads in part, in an anonymous white building with mirrored windows near Boeing Company's jumbo jet plant in Everett, Washington, engineers are planning an innovative plane that could let Boeing zip past rival Airbus with its first all-new jetliner since 1995. The 7E7 would bring together advanced materials, the latest manufacturing methods, and the newest electronics in a jetliner more efficient than any in the sky. The question is, will it ever get built? Boeing faces a critical choice between spending boldly to develop a new jet and hunkering down to play defense during the airline industry's worst downturn ever. Note this again. Boeing faces a critical choice between spending boldly to develop a new jet and hunkering down to play defense during the airline industry's worst downturn ever. In the context of that sentence, September 11th, and SARS and its impact not only on the airline business but on the airline manufacturing business. Bear in mind, too, the concept of the Earth Island, total war, Grover Norquist's position as point man for cutting taxes and point man for the Islamists who are the pretext, or not the pretext, but who are being employed as proxy warriors by the underground Reich in order to engage the United States in a concept which, in order to finance in a war, which in order to finance that war, will result in the destruction of the United States politically, socially, and economically, and consequently politically and socially. Ultimately, perhaps the U.S. may end up like the Soviet Union; it may dissolve into smaller states, and its nonpareil military eventually rust simply for lack of financing. And again, von Clausewitz developed the concept of total war, and I think we're looking at its application. Continuing with this article, two of the most powerful members of the company's 11-person board are said to be raising cost concerns about the 7E7 as they press Boeing to improve its earnings and stock price, even if that means sacrificing cutting-edge engineering. Harry Stonecipher and John McDonnell are arguing behind the scenes that Boeing, once the world's dominant commercial plane maker, ought to continue its striking diversification into defense, space, and equipment financing, according to people familiar with the situation. The two former McDonnell Douglas Corporation executives came aboard when Boeing acquired that company in 1997. Since then, they have pushed Boeing to wring more profit out of existing product lines while expanding in areas less volatile and expensive than passenger jets. The case for Boeing hedging its bets has appealed during an historic commercial aviation slump. but it implies a willingness to cede market share to the industry's only other titan, Europe's Airbus. And the strategy strongly resembles the one McDonnell Douglas employed as it sank to also-run status in the 1990s, skipping down. Despite the diversification campaign, Boeing's stock price remains tied to the fickle commercial aviation market. And now, in the context of that market, remember September 11th and note SARS. San Jose Mercury News, Saturday, April 12, 2003, New York Times article by Keith Bradshaw, Dateline Hong Kong, headlined, Two Asian Airlines Cut Back Because of SARS Impact. It reads in part, Two of Asia's biggest air carriers, Cathay Pacific Airways and Singapore Airlines, announced deep cutbacks on Friday because passengers have been scared off by a virulent respiratory disease in the region. Cathay Pacific said that it would operate 37% fewer flights than it had previously planned. Singapore Airlines said it would cut 19.7% of its flights. Both airlines said their reductions in service would last through the end of May. The figures include the more modest reductions in service announced in the past 2 weeks. Now, again, in the context of the current accounts deficit, the impact on the commercial aviation business in which the aviation manufacturing business in which the same dollar-euro struggle that we've been witnessing in the petroleum industry has been taking place. Note the following op-ed column, this also from the Financial Times of Wednesday, April 16th of 2003. This is by their regularly featured columnist, Martin Wolf, and this is titled, A World Economy Trapped by Complacency and Panic. The Rogoff referred to here is Kenneth Rogoff, the International Monetary Fund's chief economist. And listen to the following carefully, considering von Clausewitz, total war, and the U.S. current accounts deficit and the euro as weapons of mass destruction. The unbalanced pattern of demand has generated the patently unsustainable current accounts deficits and surpluses noted by Mr. Rogoff. The world economy cannot build a strong and durable recovery on the profligacy of the English-speaking countries alone. Sooner or later, such a globally unbalanced recovery will blow up, probably with currency collapses. Skipping down. The world is suffused with a mixture of complacency and panic. Complacency over the world's economy and panic over security, and now a new and so far minor disease. The end of the war is an opportunity to redress the balance. It must be seized. And again, note the effect of panic slash terror slash terrorism on September 11th on the military buildup that Islamist and tax-cutting specialist Grover Norquist is tangential to. He's the point man for the Islamist and the Republican Party, and he also is the point man for cutting taxes. I suspect that in both capacities, and in a synthesized capacity, he is acting as a point man for the Underground Reich in its application of total war. Now, more about SARS. San Francisco Chronicle, Monday, April 14th, 2003. Where did it come from? Nobody knows. New York Times story, Donald G. McNeil, Jr. Team decodes SARS virus. Startling discovery of, quote, completely new, unquote, coronavirus, skipping down. Canadian researchers, saying of the SARS virus, said the genome appears to be that of a, quote, completely new, unquote, coronavirus, unrelated to any known human or animal viruses. In the context of that, I would also cite For the Record programs 317, 324, and 386 about Project Coast, about the late Dr. Larry Ford, who was motivated and inspired by the Turner Diaries, and the South African BW program, which had more connections than a switchboard, and also the underground brooder bond, as we looked at in For the Record program 324. Consider the following, and this is obviously in interrogatory mode, Washington Post story by Joby Warwick and John Mintz, Vile Vials Live On in South Africa, subtitled Bioweapons in Private Hands Attract Interest. This reads in part, Don Goosen's calling card to the FBI was a vial of bacteria he had freeze-dried and hidden inside a toothpaste tube for secret passage to the United States. From among hundreds of flasks in his Pretoria lab, the South African scientist picked a man-made strain that was sure to impress. A microbial Frankenstein that fused the genes of a common intestinal bug with DNA from the pathogen that causes the deadly illness, gas gangrene. "This will show the Americans what we are capable of," unquote, Goosen said at the time. On May 6, 2002, Goosen slipped the parcel to a retired CIA officer who couriered the microbes 8,000 miles for a drop-off with the FBI. If U.S. officials liked what they saw, Goosen said he was prepared to offer much more. An entire collection of pathogens developed by a secret South African bioweapons research program Goosen once headed. Goosen's extraordinary offer to the FBI, outlined in obtained documents and interviews with key participants, promised scores of additional vials containing the bacteria that cause anthrax, plague, salmonella, and botulism, as well as antidotes for many of the diseases. Several strains had been genetically altered, a technique used by weapon scientists to make diseases harder to detect and defeat. All were to be delivered to the U.S. government for safekeeping and to help strengthen U.S. defenses against future terrorism attacks. And skipping down Project Coast, by the way, the FBI put the whammy on this deal. They did not follow up. Bear in mind, the FBI now headed up by Bush administration and, I believe, underground Reich insider Robert Mueller, who helped to deep-six the BCCI investigation as well as the investigation into Pan Am 103. Let's say he was less than vigorous. Continuing. Participants in the failed deal differ on what happened and why, but they agree that the bacterial strains remain in private hands in South Africa, where they have continued to attract attention from individuals interested in acquiring them. Skipping down. In the past 9 months, the scientist has been offered money by a German treasure hunter and a man claiming to be an Arab sheik. Goosen says he turned down the offers, but worries about future bioterrorism. A small container of pathogens could kill a million people, unquote, he said. And another interesting article, they said, South African officials claim to have destroyed all of Project Co's biological materials in 1993, but Goosen said many scientists kept copies of organisms and documents to continue work on dual-use projects with commercial as well as military applications. One of those apparently was Dr. Larry Ford, whose Inner Confidence anti-AIDS suppository was something that he was looking to market and also that dovetailed with bioterrorism. A couple of other articles looking ahead to future items of discussion. Bear in mind that the areas that get destroyed in Serpent's Walk and the Turner Diaries are the areas that voted for Al Gore. And bear in mind the concept of total war. And again, look at the map. Look at the areas that supported Al Gore. Look at those that supported George Bush. This was noted in the context of terror, anti-terror funding by Paul Krugman in his column of April 1st of 2003. This is called A Red-Blue Terror Alert. As recriminations fly over Operation, and we're talking about the Iraq War, on national security issues, there was at first some real bipartisanship. You may have expected the events of September 11th to temper the right's opposition to some kinds of domestic spending. And he goes on in this column here, and I will take this up greater length. In a remarkable recent article entitled The 9-10 President, Jonathan Chait of The New Republic documents how the Bush administration has systematically neglected homeland security since September 11th. In its effort to keep spending down, the administration has repeatedly blocked proposals to enhance security at potential domestic targets like ports and nuclear plants. What Mr. Chait doesn't point out is the extent to which already inadequate anti-terrorism spending has been focused on the parts of the country that need it least. I've written before about the myth of the heartland, roughly speaking the red states, which voted for George W. Bush in the 2000 election, as opposed to the blue states, unquote, which voted for Al Gore. And he notes that those are the areas, the rural areas, the blue states getting the terror funding, the red states not. That concludes For the Record Program 407 Side 2, Pecunia Nervus Belli, von Clausewitz Total War, and the U.S. Current Accounts Deficit, being recorded on April 21st of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.